I did look up happy, joyous, and free, and happy, a feeling, pleasure, contentment, satisfaction, serenity. Serenity, I added. And the joyous is pleasure, happiness, or causing great pleasure and happiness, which I thought was interesting. It can go, you can be joyous and give. And I thought, boy, that's really nice. And free is more of a negative definition. Not under control or in the power of another, able to act or be done as one wishes, not confined or imprisoned. And then some of the synonyms, liberty, autonomy, and absence of restraint. And boy, I was so not free when I was in my disease, big time, big time. I made my parents my higher power, and then made my spouse my higher power, and then I decided I could do it. I could do the job, and tried that for many, many decades. So, wanted to start with a little defining our emotional sobriety, one of our Essanon readings, one that I have incessantly been choosing as the optional reading for my Saturday afternoon meeting. So they don't ask me to ask to choose it anymore. We find that each of us has a particular behaviors and attitudes that we have found to be destructive to ourselves and that we hope to eliminate, thus becoming more sober. Some of us wanted to let go of behaviors like snooping, raging at the sexaholic, or lying to family and friends to cover up the addiction, for example. So let me pause there. I didn't do snooping. I only heard about that when I got to my first Essanon meeting, and figured, nah, they're saying not to do it. And raging at the sexaholic, I did more sarcasm and criticism, controlling, explaining. If I just explained things enough, that was my thing. And judging. Oh, I did so much judging. Of course, blaming. And lying to family and friends to cover up the addiction. So the lying to family and friends to cover up the addiction. My variation of that was minimizing. I did a lot of minimizing. Justifying, forgetting. So I would hear about something from a family member or a friend that my husband had made them uncomfortable, and I would forget. I would literally forget. When I would go to him, approach him with something, he would, most of the time when I would go to him, it was they're imagining it, or oh, it's not a big deal, or I'll apologize. And to continue with the list here, others wanted to become more honest with ourselves and others. And as you can hear, I was really lacking in the honest to myself and to others. And or to become more tolerant and open-minded. Well, I had the answers for everybody, so I didn't need to be more tolerant. You just needed to listen. You know, it would be funny if it wasn't so tragic, you know? And open-minded. And I was so not open-minded. One of the more recent gifts of this program in the last 5 years, since the pandemic, I learned this in the pandemic, about the set-aside prayer and, you know, God, please help me set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience or a new God experience. And that has been game-changing for me. And back to the reading, we must change these actions and attitudes if we want to find serenity. And we already know that serenity is a type of happiness, because I've thrown it in there. However, all of us have failed in our efforts from time to time and found ourselves repeating the destructive behavior almost before we knew it. And that's been the shock in recovery, is that I would do something, and then as soon as it came out of my mouth, I went, oh God, I've done it again. It became so habitual. It was so ingrained. I was raised, like so many of us, in an addicted family. There was sex addiction that I can trace back to a grandfather, and alcoholism, compulsive overeating, gambling, and all the anons that went with those various things. So I was raised really early. It came with the mother's milk, my becoming an anon and having another, you know, I had other addictions too, which I don't think I'm supposed to say, so I'm gonna leave that out. In Essanon, we often call this a relapse, slip, or loss of our sobriety. And I must say, not having an actual substance was hard for me at first. I had already had recovery in another program and an individual addiction where there was a substance. And so to have no substance, it was like, this is just weird. And but I also knew at that point that the 12 steps worked. So I just had to figure out how they could work. I just trusted the system. I trusted those steps. I trusted the community. And and I figured I'll deal with defining sobriety when it comes up. And I love the little slip, you know. There's no way to do this program perfectly in terms of my substance. And you guys said it right away. And so it's just spiritual progress. That's what I'm aiming for, spiritual progress with as much honesty as I can muster. And then when we do have that slip, we all seem to share similar emotions, and we can depend on other members of Essanon to understand and to help us get back on the right track. And that's been so true. It's like, gosh, I just mess up so badly sometimes. And I'm told, you know, it's just part of it. And I'll grow. I heard at a meeting today that in the valleys are where the most fruitful soil is, the most enriched soil. Thank you, whoever said that. I forget his name. Anyway. And so being sober in Essanon includes keeping the focus on myself. Okay. Oh, who wanted to do that? If I could blame my husband for everything, that was really what I wanted. And if he would just do it my way, and if I could just explain it in yet another way, he'd get it, and it would change, and everything would be okay. And he kept on telling me after we got here that it was none of my business, and he was actually right. And you guys told me to keep the focus on myself, so that's what I continue to try to do. Looking at myself and at life realistically, one of my first prayers in this program was just to keep me in reality. Let me live in reality, God. And I came in 2002 when I became finally willing, I guess, to be aware of my husband's sex addiction. I was married 28 years, had known him 33. Didn't really have a clue, except he made people uncomfortable and told a lot of dirty jokes in public and objectified every woman who was under, I don't know, 80 and over 20. And but other than that, I don't know. So I'm back in reality, I think. I really think I'm in reality. Another thing about being sober is not wanting to be an object. I came in 2002, and I could see I was an had been objectified, and we came up with new rules for the engagement and periods of abstinence. And he got into some recovery a little bit. He dabbled, and and I thought it was better. I always wanted to see that it was a little bit better. He had done just enough. And this past 10 months ago, I finally woke up, and someone had made an amends to me, someone very close in my life. And when she finished the amends, and she was spot on with how she had hurt me, she articulated it better than I even realized. And it was such a gift, best amends I've ever received. And then we got to talking, and she brought up an incident where my husband had been inappropriate, and I had completely forgotten. And so she reminded me, and I went, oh yeah, okay. And he had said he was going to apologize, because I had talked to him about it at the time, and apparently he never had. And so at this point, I'm married about 49 years, and I've known him 53, and I have this new awareness. And I then promptly, I had a trip planned with my spouse to Australia. And I thought, okay, fine, I'm going to go on this trip. And when I came home, I saw this, the friend of mine, and when I saw her, I remembered our conversation. I had completely forgotten. It had only been 3.5-4 weeks. And at that point, something snapped in me, and I went, you know, he's not going to be changing. He gives the lip service to change. He can speak the language of program. We went to another 12-step couples program, and we worked the steps, all 12 steps. And he still didn't treat me very well. And I minimize, I justify. I was trying to keep the focus on myself. I am such a keep the focus on myself person. I am so good at it. Whatever you guys tell me, I'll take it and run with it. And it kept me in the chains. It was just, it's hideous. And then once that floodgate opened, and I realized in 3.5 weeks I could forget something so powerful, that it was pretty close to over. I went on a few hikes to kind of get my head together, went to a few meetings, did some writing, and a lot of prayer and meditation. And then I called up that friend again and said, could you repeat what you had told me about what my spouse had done? So she repeated it, and I said, slow down, I need to write it down because I don't want to forget it again. I have to have a written record now because I know this thing I forget. And so I wrote it down as she said it, and then I had the rest of my day, but I was decided. And the next day, I said to my partner, I no longer want to be in coupleship with you, you know. And so this is a 78-and-a-half-year-old man. No, is he 79 already? No, he was 78-and-a-half. And we were 49-and-a-half years married. I had been planning our 50th wedding anniversary since we got married until he told me to stop it. And I think that may have also helped contribute. I certainly didn't want to plan anything for this occasion coming up. And so then it was, and he was just shocked, and he just went ballistic. I am very much like the story in the big book, the page 60 to 63 about the one, the actor who wants to take all the parts and wants to direct and everything and is selfish to the core no matter how they do it. Well, that's me. I think that's all of us because it's in the big book. It means it's everybody. And so I was able to see that, yeah, that's who my husband is. But he's a very good talker. He's very charming. And I wanted so much to believe that he was getting better that I spent a lot of years, 22 years in these rooms. And I acted out with him. So I wound up spending a few years in SA and SAA also. Oh, shoot, I said those names. Okay. Do whatever you want with the recording. I'm over it. Okay. Okay. So, how much time do I have now?
8 minutes.
8 minutes. Okay, great. So, it was traumatic for the kids. We got three kids. Their spouses, they thought this, they knew we were in programs and they knew we went to this and that and the other thing, but they thought we were forever. And this shattered them. I mean, these are middle-aged people, each with three kids, each with three kids. And but I think they're starting to get it now. And once they got over the shock, they've been supportive. After they had me go, my daughter wanted me to go and get, I shared this earlier. She thought for sure there was something wrong with my brain, and she had good reason to think that might have been the case. But I went through more neurological testing that was horrible, because I always thought, I was afraid they were going to find something. But, but they didn't. I'm normal, and I can verify it. None of you can, but I can. I have it written down, But I wound up moving forward, and they've calmed down. It's supportive. One of the things my spouse and I decided to do upon the request of the children was still get together as a family for family events. With that many people in our immediate family, just the birthday parties are almost constant. And so we get together a lot, and he is now living at our daughter's house. It's been 10 months, and he still doesn't have a clue. He doesn't know why I've done this, because he's perfect. And he's such a gift, and he doesn't know except that there's something radically wrong with me. And he takes every opportunity, from what I've been told, to say what an awful person I am and how I've done him wrong. And I know why I waited so long, or why I did conveniently forget. I think in addition to everything else, I needed to be very strong in my program and very centered and know my worth to be able to withstand the barrage. And I have found so much support in these rooms, and I'm just so, so grateful. I am happy, joyous, and free. And I did 99% of the work in the household, and he would only help in lip service and couldn't really do anything. And so I've relieved myself of the pretending that his gift of a peanut wrapped up in tin foil was really a gift. He did that, honest to good, with a straight face. And he trained me well to just agree with everything. So I'm not doing the lying and minimizing. I'm not controlling and manipulating and blaming. I'm not trying to fix. I'm not trying to criticize. I'm not procrastinating. I'm not as tardy as I used to be. And I'm not allowing myself to be an object during sex. And I'm doing household tasks, because household tasks need to be done. And I don't allow him to love me in an unhealthy way anymore. I don't play along. It's like just, and I've had to set such big boundaries, because he doesn't have any. He just doesn't have, he doesn't have a clue. And I've been asked so many times, am I feeling lonely? No, I was feeling lonely when I was with him. And that's a horrible, hideous feeling. Now I'm alone. I did my first completely solo trip, traveling. I love to travel. And they have solo travelers. They're not alone. They're solos. They're not singles looking for a partner. They're solos. And I love that term. I have been so much more available for relationships, for spontaneity, for following my faith tradition in a way that suits me. I don't have to hear him making jokes about it. I don't have to worry about him making jokes during what feels like a sacred service to me. I don't have to worry about him telling the same self-centered, self-aggrandizing story for the millionth time. And it's not more work, because I had to pretend that he was helping. That's slavery, you know, to do the work and then have to make it seem like he's not. Another minute or two, I suppose. Okay, let me see. In the page 45 of the big book, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. This disease knocked me to the floor. I am so powerless over everybody and everything, including myself. I just go to my higher power and ask help. I am so grateful for the people in this program. I am so grateful for my sponsor. This is my second sponsor. My first one I had for a long time, and she died of cancer. I mean, she was younger than me. It was just horrible. Anyway, but I've been blessed now with a new one. Not so new anymore, but, you know. And one of the freedoms I have now is one of the hardest things. Every time I go to the store, there was always an agenda from my husband. So to walk through a store, the first thing I want to do is pick up, oh, that shirt he wants. You know, I know he wants that one, and because he, whatever. Or I want to get him that, you know, his favorite half and half, or his favorite this, or his that, and blah, blah, blah. It took 6 months for me to go to the store and not have those strong feelings. That's how addicted I was. It's horrifying, horrifying. I'm treating people more authentically. My relationships are getting so much deeper, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful. I am just so grateful. So, and all the gifts of the Essanon program are coming true for me, and I'm looking forward to more. And thank you very much, Angelica, for asking me. I was not one that the board had thought, oh, I'm a fill-in for someone who canceled a couple of weeks ago. So I came in here humbled on many levels, and so I'm glad to be here today to give a little service. So thank you.